Fear does not exist in this dojo. Pain does not exist in this dojo. We do not train to be merciful here. This is a place of learning. This is a place of knowledge. For years we've gotten from Karate Kid and Cobra Kai. And now it's time for us to get back.
It'll open up a way for us to talk about all kinds of martial arts movies. There's also like no way to not compare those instantly to Karate Kid.
Man, face you, he is your enemy, and the enemy deserves no mercy. We teach the way of the mic. Welcome to Dojo 9.
We're back in the dojo. This is officially going to be called Lesson 3, which may be broken up into anywhere from, you know, 2 to 4 parts, depending on how long we talk for. But it's, you know, it's been what feels like a long time. It's only been a couple weeks, really, for us at the dojo. But for everybody else who's been waiting for Season 3, it's finally here. And I can't think of a better group of guys to talk about it with than the folks in the dojo tonight. The senseis on all sides of the mat. We have come to the center. We have bowed to each other. And now we are bowing to the audience and getting ready to talk about Season 3 of Cobra Kai. Oh, my God. I don't even know where to start.
Hell yeah.
Super stoked.
Okay, I guess I'll dive us in. I'm never shy when it comes to talking about Cobra Kai.
I was hoping you would, dude. I was hoping you would.
I figured maybe we shoot off with some hot takes. Favorite scene, round table. Everyone just go. First thing that comes to mind.
Crease.
Okay, which crease scene? The Vietnam
just
stuff?
Just the backstory. It made me change my whole perspective on who Crease actually was compared to, you know, that backstory to what he has turned into. You know, in Season 3 of Cobra Kai, I mean, during the Karate Kid movies, he was just this bad guy. You didn't really think about what made him that way. And then they talk about all this stuff that he had to go through in the war. And there's a point in that story that kind of makes me feel sorry for him. But then he turns around and he's even a bigger villain in Season 3 than what he was in the Karate Kid movies. So it was a huge switch in emotion for me.
I dig that. I actually am one who spent like 30 years thinking about Crease in Vietnam and Silver in Vietnam and what that was like and just, you know, dissecting little snippets of interviews with Martin Cove. And, you know, I totally echo your sentiment that it was not what I was expecting. It changed my, you know, view of the character. Like I said, I've been thinking about this forever. And I heard an interview with Martin Cove years ago where he said Crease was someone who wanted everything in life. He never lost, ever, until he went to Vietnam and they wouldn't let him win. So when I first saw that he was the waiter and he was kind of a loserly character, I was like, oh, man, I thought he was the jock. I thought, but the more they stuck with that, the longer it played out, the more I liked it. And I thought it was, you have to give some kind of, you know, dimension, how you turn into Crease. That's more interesting than like, oh, he was kind of born into it, you know?
And speaking of that scene where he was in that little diner and he was being picked on, did you guys recognize that that's the same diner that Crease talked to Johnny Lawrence at?
Oh, in Season 2?
Yeah.
I did not pick up on that.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah. I picked up on young Crease driving what would eventually be Miyagi's car.
I also did Daniel. That was
mm-hmm. the jock, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, funny. It wasn't Crease. It was the misdirect who we thought was going to be Crease. Right.
Well, actually, and to throw you guys off a little bit, that character actually is Martin Cove's son.
Yeah, Jesse Cove.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so they really, you know, that's one thing. They're so delightful this whole season with kind of throwing you off the trail or giving you false breadcrumbs, you know, like, oh, the doctor flew in from out of state. She has some questions. Blonde hair turns around. Allie. Yeah. Oh, I loved that.
Dude, like, what about, you know, for you? It had to be a huge one with the guy with the ponytail in Vietnam turning out to not be Terry Silver.
Oh, yes. That was beautiful. Beautiful. Because he's calling him Johnny.
He even looked like Silver in the face, too.
He actually looked more like Silver than the guy who they cast as young Silver. And the only caveat about, and I like, okay, Silver was kind of scrawnier and nerdier and kind of, you know, Cobra Kai changed him. eventually.
Yeah.
And you know Kreese is around there for a couple more years because he was Army champion from 70 to 72.
Ooh.
And everything we saw was in 1969.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more to that story.
It was Kreese begins.
Whether or not we see it.
Lesson about balance. Lesson not just karate only.
Finish him!
Lesson for all life.
Your enemies think they're the hero, and you're the villain. There is no good.
Look at this freak.
There is no bad. Only weak.
But there's more to Silver's story there. But the one thing is the guy they cast has brown eyes and Thomasine Griffith has blue eyes.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing where it's like, all right, you got to kind of squint a little bit.
Yeah.
But other than that, the guy did a great job.
We got to put some Vaseline on the lens.
Only you would catch the eyes, Chris. Only you.
Well, because, you know, he had eyes of conviction, Mr. LaRusso.
Yeah.
He just, you know, those eyes were important. Those eyes were menacing. Those are the Emperor's eyes, you know?
Yeah, dude.
A funny thing about Thomasine Griffin, I don't know if you guys know, but he's a multiple black belt in both karate and taekwondo.
Insanely skilled.
He was, he was one of the only legitimate martial artists in the whole thing. Martin Cove did have some martial arts background, but not as extensive as Thomasine Griffin. I actually met both of those characters and Daniel LaRusso at a karate tournament years ago. I did.
Oh, wow.
When I was in my early 20s, it was in Arizona. And I mean, Daniel LaRusso, the character, the actor, he himself has only done martial arts according to the Karate Kid, but he's become like an ambassador to the old school karate. And that's why they keep bringing him up in all these new karate tournaments and stuff now.
Oh, that's awesome. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, there have been very few, and before we get back to the roundtable, you know, we should say there have been a few people involved in Karate Kid with a good martial arts background.
Oh, yeah.
Pat Johnson, who trained all the fighters for Karate Kid 1,
mm-hmm.
Cobra Kai's and the Miyagis and Daniel LaRusso and stuff. Very skilled, worked with Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
William Christopher Ford from Karate Kid 3, who plays Dennis.
Yeah.
He's a very, very skilled sensei. I think it's Okinawan Goju Ryo. My apologies if I'm wrong about that. But he has a great series called 52 Masters, where he does study with. And Sean Kanan was also, Mike Barnes was a fairly accomplished young budding karate, fighter or whatever.
Upcoming megastar.
He had some experience. But for the most part, everyone else, like, you know, fucking Pat Morita didn't know shit.
No.
and he's just a hell of an actor, and that's why it works.
I mean, that's the craziest part of this whole thing is, like, I know that we're going to get into how emotional this season was, too, but I, for the first time, and I know we've talked about on the show how this show represents and Karate Kid represents earthbound Star Wars level wisdom as far as we're concerned, you know, like the lessons to live life by. And the idea that, like, we actually think of Mr. Miyagi like it was a real person who existed, at least for me, that's how it feels. And to think about the fact that he was creating that image, like, that's the craft of acting, right? Like, that when people say what really makes a good actor or what's a good performance, the fact that that guy had no martial arts experience and is a huge pothead and was just literally kind of like barely getting through, and that they didn't even want him at first, you know, there's so many stories, especially since we've started the dojo.
Jerry Weintraub was very against it, and then he became his biggest supporter.
And how could this have all existed without him, you know?
Yeah, there were numerous actors that they wanted as both Daniel and Miyagi that never came to fruition, and I think that would have ruined any Karate Kid movie without Daniel and Miyagi.
Of course, absolutely. It's, you know, it's one of the many movies that C. Thomas Howell came very close to playing the lead in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow.
I think he was one of the top choices for Daniel back when it was Daniel Weber. They had to change it to LaRusso after they cast Ralph Macchio.
Just a little bit. And I love
C. Thomas Howell, and he would have been fine, but he wouldn't have been Ralph Macchio. And that would have been a crime. Same thing as, like, Back to the Future. C. Thomas Howell was very close to playing Marty McFly, and he would have been great as Marty McFly, but he wouldn't have been Michael J. Fox.
Right.
You know, and that would be a crime.
Yeah.
You know, I think he would have been better than Eric Stoltz, though, and that's a whole another podcast in itself. You know, they wouldn't have shut down the movie. They would have released it. It just wouldn't have been the mega hit that it was.
Sure.
But anyway, back to the round table, you know, favorite scene of season three, who, I don't know, Dave, Mickey, what do you guys think?
Well, for me, I'm just going to chime in real quick.
Go for it, man.
It's not, my favorite scene is actually, the Daniel Kumiko Miyagi letter scene.
Yes.
Oh,
that
God.
To me was the piece of gold in season three. Yeah. I mean, there were so many other good scenes too, but to me, that was like the hugest callback and like just such an eye-opening thing for Daniel to just come out and say, like, you know, Mr. Miyagi was the same age that I am when he first met me.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. Like that, just tying that together. So that scene for me was like, and that was obviously the, you know, Niagara Falls for me. That was like,
cried hardcore. That was one of the, I full on was trying to make sure my girlfriend couldn't see me because I wasn't sure if she was crying too. And I was like, holy shit, I gotta, I'm like, we're lying there watching it in bed. And I'm like, trying to like, I'm not crying. This isn't me shaking. No, I just like, what a great way and what an earned and not cheap way either to bring Miyagi's character back. Like, holy shit. I actually, that whole sequence, the Okinawa trip for me was because we had hyped it up so much. One of the things I was really worried going into the season was that we may have overhyped things for ourselves or set, like, you know, one of the things I love about our promo is when Chris is talking about how one of the hardest things for being fans of stuff is you have high expectations, and how could you not have crazy high expectations for something like this, and they consistently keep, like, defeating them, you know, like, they are knocking this out of the park. And the first thing that struck me is when, you know, Daniel's in the bar. He's already gone to the business meeting. Doyona has said, yeah, thanks for coming here and everything, but we're still not coming back. We're still distancing ourselves from the bad PR that was Hall Brawl. That's what I call it. I call it Hall Brawl. And I call the one from this season is Deck the Halls Brawl. And we'll get there. But, you know, when he's in the bar and the guy's like, oh, you know, this person you miss who sounded very wise. And he's like, you know, are you going to go see them? And he's like, they're not with us anymore, so I can't. And he goes, what an American way of thinking. And I was like, yeah, that's us. We can't see the spiritual side, man. We're so focused on the depressed, like, oh, fuck, I just lost the company, or oh, shit, that meeting didn't go well. You're in the heartland, man. You're where this place, you're where the magic all started. You're on the Shire. Go check out where they found the ring. You know what I mean?
And you know, that right there is a really beautiful moment because he says quite literally, they have a way of speaking to us even when they're gone. And what happens next but a commercial, which is not something I would imagine you even see on TV that often in Japan, for travel to Okinawa spoken in English. That is Miyagi's spirit coming through the fucking TV, telling Daniel-san, come home, it will be okay. You have put good out into the world, and good wants to come back to you, and you're just almost close enough right now. Just get a little bit closer.
For sure,
That was beautiful.
And I thought, like, I mean, that whole, like, you know, sequence, you know, of events in Okinawa and Japan really was like, that was the crust of the Daniel storyline. To me, it was like, you know, I like to label this season as a season of backstories because you got backstories on pretty much everybody.
Yeah.
And it was so crucial. And like, what a way to bring Kumiko back in and Chosen as well.
Dude,
I mean, like,
Chosen,
you know, I'm sure we'll talk about more of that, but
that was, to be honest, I was actually wondering, I mean, I feel like it's going to be really hard for us to do this without just jumping to these highlights. So maybe that's totally okay for lesson three to be a little all over the place and kind of zoning in. We'll kind of go to something else and then we'll probably come back. But like, how did you guys feel about the way, I mean, I felt the way they did Chosen, first leaving it with a cliffhanger in episode four, right? Where he just says, Daniel-san, mm-hmm. from like off screen. And when Daniel turns and sees him and he has that face where we're like, oh shit, they're about to fight right here in the restaurant. Like, this is no joke, man. Daniel has a whole trail of people waiting to kick his ass the next time they see him. And then the next episode, they totally subverted that, you know? And I just thought it was brilliant. Like, everything about how he's like at peace now. And he's like, I felt shame for so long. Like, this is post-therapy Chosen, you know? This is post-meditation Chosen.
The interesting thing about the Chosen, when they actually did do their little sparring session or whatever you guys want to call it, when they go into the fact that there might be secrets hidden from Daniel, that made me look at Miyagi's character again about, you know, taking away a person's weapon to wage war. When Chosen all of a sudden hits Daniel with these pressure point techniques, why didn't Miyagi show Daniel that before? Did Miyagi think that Daniel was too weak or that he wasn't ready for that? So it made me rethink, you know, what was in Miyagi's head while training Daniel as well.
I think I just always took it as Miyagi, you know, that particular secret that he held back from Daniel. I just think that he didn't want to train Daniel in that way because that was something that was more of a war technique. It was more of more of something he learned and he trained while he was, you know, before he went to war and everything else like that, and he used that. And in Daniel's case, he didn't want to train, you know, Daniel in that art because, you know, Daniel was just so naive to everything. And what would Daniel do with that knowledge?
Okay. Right? Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, he did know that Daniel did have kind of a short temper and a big mouth.
Exactly.
You know, he even said he has a hard head. He even said it to Yukie in one of his letters. And you think about that scene in Karate Kid 3 where he breaks the guy's nose at the club.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which is one of my favorite scenes of the trilogy, actually. It's definitely one of my favorite scenes of the third film.
Yeah.
But and I always like that scene, and I hope that there is a callback to that.
I hope
in,
that they bring
season four.
Yeah, like they bring the real genius guy back to be like, I remember when LaRusso broke my nose in a club, you know? Like,
yeah, that's right. I always forget that's the kid from fucking Real Genius.
It's yeah,
like,
I know.
The
yeah.
only other thing he ever did was Real Genius, and then he pops up again in Karate Kid 3 just to get his ass kicked, and he has totally like his voice is dropped, so you like there's if you don't recognize him in that quick second when he watches Daniel and what was her name, Jess, the
Jessica Andrews
walks in with him,
yeah.
And like, and then Terry Silver kind of points him out, you know, like if you didn't catch his face in the light, he's just some rando guy. But I was just like, there's something so beautifully calling back to the 80s about bringing that guy in. So since they've been so good about it this whole time with this show, they have to keep that up. So if you guys are listening, which I really hope you guys are, because we could totally kick the shit out of that Netflix After the Show. We are killing it over here in the dojo.
Yeah,
that,
the
party, don't get me started on that After
no
show.
Fucking party.
Yeah. You knew I was going to bring it up, right? Like, there's no way we could talk about Cobra Kai and Netflix without at least just kind of throwing a jab or two that way. Like, dude, really? Come on.
Yeah.
I think I told Chris, I'm like, I am such I am not a fan of David Spade in any way. So just him being on it, hosting it, I was like, oh, God, no.
This is over before it
I'm
begins.
I'm not against. I like David Spade, but he's not a natural choice for a host. But we will. I'm sure we will in time get to the after party portion of the podcast. Completing the roundtable section, Dave, what was your favorite scene this season?
I mean, I really liked seeing Kreese on that bridge fighting his mentor, because it's like, if we are gonna, and I gotta say, for us, I felt like there was a lot of stuff that came to fruition that we had all said we wanted out of this season. And I think the way that is playing out at the same time that the legacy character fight is playing out, I was just like, holy shit, the power here is so insane. Because he's still good Kreese at that point. You know, like, we, like, I have in notes here, first time ever I took notes for a podcast, guys, because of this show. But I have, like, a big section of one of the pages that says, young Kreese, good. Old Kreese, bad. And this is, like, where they flip. This is the pivot point. So I kind of liked that scene where he finally, like, winds up having to beat his mentor. I wanted to like the Christmas brawl, but I didn't like it as much as the hall brawl. And that's going to be, I'm going to be a little bit of a stick in the mud when we get to that, to talking about that.
I mean, it was still fine though.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because my favorite fight from a story point in the whole franchise is also my least favorite fight from a choreography standpoint in the whole franchise. And that's the end of Karate Kid 2. It's laughably bad, the fight choreography, but the story is incredibly good. So, to me, that's always something I try and remind myself, you know, that what the more important element is in any fight is always the story.
Yeah.
And I was invested in the story in the Deck the Hall brawl.
Yeah.
I did think it was quite good. But for me, I have to say my favorite scene, you know, not to piggyback too much on what Mickey was saying, but I only have two words, Tang Mei. That just, you know, forget about it. Like, you know, even when the tears were like slowing or drying, like that's just like, you know, floodgates for, you know, that whole scene in general, that I was lost until I found Daniel-san, that kind of, just beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Talk about a layer, adding a layer to a character that is already so rich. I mean, thinking about Miyagi with insecurities is like, it hurts my brain a little bit. You know what I mean? It's sort of like, but he's real. It made him so much more real.
Yeah.
You know, you also get like Kumiko coming, kind of like coming clean with Daniel. Like when Daniel's asking like, oh, how come, you know, you're single or like, you know, or you never found anybody or whatever the case may be. And she's like, well, nobody fought, you know, to the death for me, you know?
Yeah.
And that was like, that was like, oh my God, because it's a little bit like, because you think about like part three and he's basically kind of like shitting on her in a way, like, oh, she just, you know, she just left and like, you know, and, you know, went to dancing.
Like
they brought her over and he just, and she just kind of like, at least that was my perception. Like they brought her over and she just kind of like said like, all right, screw you guys. I'm going to do this.
I feel like I felt like that's how they portrayed Allie's exit in the second movie.
Yeah,
they
addressed.
Like, I felt like, that I feel way like for her too.
Daniel, but I could, felt you know, was more me. Like, well, she had the opportunity of a lifetime. I guess, you know, I could understand it, but he was definitely still hurt by it. But with Allie, he came in storming like, yo, this bitch is over here kissing this other guy. I mean, you know, next thing I know, the car's wrapped around a friggin' tree. And then to get the other side of that in this, like now, 30 years later.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah.
Holy shit. I love, like, it feels like they are going through the pains of adulthood that we are all going through at the same time. You know what I mean? Like, who hasn't had an ex from 20 years ago tell you, no, this is what happened that day? And you're like, oh, shit. Wow. I have really been thinking about that one way for a long time. I didn't even give room for this thing to possibly be true. And now here it is.
Well, I mean, in my perspective on that, Daniel, in season one, in my opinion, and I mean, I hope this doesn't break anybody's heart, but he was an asshole in season one, in my opinion. And not so much an asshole towards people, but the fact that, like, when Johnny came in because of the car situation, you could see a look on Daniel's face that Daniel just thought he was better than Johnny from the get-go when he walked in. It made me think of, well, you know, me personally, I'm more of a Johnny person. My personality, but Daniel was a hero for me. That movie was made in 1984, I believe. I was born that year. I earned two black belts in Kenpo Karate because of the Karate Kid movies. So for Daniel to act like the way he was in season one kind of made me a little upset because he wasn't what he was in the original, you know, the movie, obviously, because of what had happened.
Kind of fell from grace for you a little bit there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, you mentioned Kenpo, and I just realized when I was naming the legitimate martial artists involved with the Karate Kid, I forgot Daryl Vidal.
Yeah.
Yep. He doubled for Miyagi, who invented the crane kick. Oh, yeah, you can't not give that man his credit.
They gave him a whole...
That is him on the stump doing the crane kick in the wide shot.
And they gave a whole section when he goes out on the date with Ali and he's talking about, like, the first year, I lost to Vidal.
Yeah.
And they were just like, oh, and I immediately started unloading to carry. I'm like, oh, that's the guy who they fought in the first movie. He was really the one doing the crane kick on the stumps with Mr. Miyagi. And he actually invented the crane kick, and we linked the video to John Avildsen talking about it, and I was like, oh my god, this is real shit. And she's like, oh my god. And I'm like, you don't know what it's like to watch this show for us, man. This is fucking nuts. But she's right there just because she's a child of the 80s too. So she, you know, anybody who remembers when this first appeared, it's sort of like there's an unmistakable, like, a fuel injection with the fact that it's come back this way and to the level that it has. Like, it's so well made. They're putting money into it. You know what I mean? And no one is coming and sleepwalking through their parts. You know, like, you could tell Martin Cove maybe thought this was never going to happen, but now that it is, it's like, he's like, dude, I'm using everything I got. You know what I mean?
When the Cobra Kai first came on YouTube, to be honest, as a fan, a huge fan of the Karate Kid franchise, I thought this was a damn joke. I mean, how what are they going to do to make it watchworthy? First, by putting it on YouTube, I didn't think anything of that, you know, but I thought that what could they possibly bring to the table this many years after, you know, Daniel and Miyagi both became legends in cinema? And I mean, just, I'm a professional fighter. They're the reasons I'm a professional fighter, you know, so what was the thought process in bringing it back 30 years later, and what could they possibly bring to the table is what I was wondering.
You know, I was sitting there on the opposite end. I was sitting there, and because I'm just such a fanboy, and like, and you know, even though my hopes have been dashed, I get my hopes up. You know, I thought Batman v Superman was going to be amazing. I thought, like, the whole DC thing was going to be amazing. I thought the new Star Wars stuff was going to be amazing. And I just keep getting my heart broke over and over and over and over again.
Well, legitimately,
for some
they
reason,
should
when
have.
When I saw this trailer, I was like, honestly, the first trailer for season one wasn't that great from a trailer perspective.
Yeah.
But it hit some notes for me that I was like, oh, this could be it. Like, this could be what's been in my mind for 30 years. Like, you know, where, you know, I've basically said they should have started doing Daniel with students in the 90s. Mm. But now I'm glad they didn't, because it took this long and it got done right.
Yeah.
You know, Macchio is famous for saying he turned down like 30 years worth of bad ideas and bad pitches.
Yeah.
And then when he heard a good one, he said yes. And I'm sure William Zabka, same thing.
That's
Even Ralph Macchio, I was going through interviews of all the actors, even Ralph Macchio, he, from what I understood, he didn't have high expectations of Cobra Kai, because I think he was sort of where I'm at. I mean, what could you possibly bring to the table 30 years later, especially after, you know, Miyagi is not there anymore? I mean, what could happen beyond that point? And I think maybe Ralph Macchio was there too, because, you know, in the first three movies, you couldn't have Daniel without Miyagi, and now all of a sudden, there's Daniel and no Miyagi, so...
Yeah, but it's also, I mean, I don't think we could get the same story if it was just about Johnny and Kreese. I think it has to be about Johnny and Daniel. You know what I mean? Like,
of course.
And one of my other complaints about this season is that I really was hoping it wasn't going to take the whole season for them to team up. I get why it did, and I get why they paced it the way it did. And, you know, the high points with the trip to Okinawa, yeah, you do have to account for a lot. And you have to build in some time. And I almost felt like maybe that's just because I wanted it so bad. I was like, man, couldn't we've gotten here by like episode 6 or 7, where they have Eagle Fang and Miyagi-Do becoming one to take down the evilness of Cobra Kai. But it's just left me sitting here going like, well, season 3 just ended. We watched it the whole first weekend. And now do we even have a rumor of when season 4 is like going into production or coming out? And it's that knowing that we're not going to get it for a while, that's sort of just like, fuck, man.
Well, you know, we are not going to have to wait as long as we waited for season 3.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the amazing thing about it is that, again, like, my hopes were too high for season one, and it surpassed them. It literally, my hopes didn't have a reason to be as high as they were, and it blew past my expectations. And season three did the same thing after 2 years worth of buildup, pretty much, you know, or a year and three quarters, whatever it was. Felt like 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, because we were starved. We went so much longer without trailers or anything.
Yeah.
You know, we were really starved, and there was months where we just heard nothing. And it was like, what is going on? And then we had to worry about the show moving to Netflix, and then it got a huge bump after it moved to Netflix, and they, you know, they dub all these languages. But, you know, I mean to ramble, but it, you know, again, it just exceeded so many expectations for me, especially in the finale fight, you know.
Oh, geez.
I guess it became inevitable.
Yeah.
You know, Kreese foreshadowed it beautifully in the first episode. You know, he's like, that's why I'm not, you know, Daniel says, that's why I won't fight you. And he goes, oh, but you will.
Yeah.
And it's like, delicious.
You got so many. I feel like, you know, season three, we got a lot of fights, actually. They like kind of like, you know, doubled down on the fights. We had the laser tag fight. We had the soccer field fight, kind of.
And then we had that was rife with callbacks to the first movie, man.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Was so awesome.
Even the music. I mean, even the music in the background, I mean, it just reminded me of all those scenes from the first Karate Kid movies. I'm like, you know, I understand that, you know, they're trying to bring back nostalgia and stuff, but a part of me is like, you guys can come up with something a little bit more original, you know? But well, I loved it.
I like that the daughter's following, you know, in the father's footsteps of, the school sucks! And it's like,
that was the best.
It really sucks. You
know? Yeah.
Yeah, that was definitely a nice callback. You know, I really liked what they did with Amanda this year, too. That was a pleasant surprise for me. I like this gloves-are-off version of Amanda.
Yeah.
Like, let's go get Kreese. I'm going to slap this motherfucker. What'd you say about my daughter? You know, the calling him a piece of shit at the town meetings? Like, yes!
Yeah.
Where has this Amanda been the first two seasons, you know? She's, I don't know. I thought that was a pleasant surprise. And, you know, because I'm always going to ship Daniel and Kumiko, that was a nice consolation prize.
Well, I know you must have noticed the moment when LaRusso first hides his wedding ring when he first meets up with Kumiko. And at first, it almost seems like, oh shit, dude, is he gonna do something? Like, what's gonna happen here? He was definitely.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
He was definitely pulling. And I don't know if that was just me kind of being a little like, you know, dude. I mean, what would you do? You're in Japan. You meet this clearly a love of your life. You know what I mean? And you've also been having a rough time. Although Amanda had started to come back from the automatically blaming karate, which to me felt like it was reading like, yes, you're the only one in the family besides the other kid who's just got his face buried in video games all day who doesn't know karate, so it's easy for you to just say, no more karate. We're just getting rid of karate. It's over. And then it's like, no, this isn't about the karate. The karate's not the problem. It's these fucking psychos that are like stuck in the mix here, and we just gotta, it's always about the people, not the practice, you know?
Yeah,
we don't need to make it a karate Footloose here.
Yeah, which was a perfect line. That was so awesome. And
another wink, you know, and you know, the dad, this isn't 1984. You know?
Yeah, oh my God. Stuff like that was awesome. Sam was still a hard thing for me to deal with this season, you know.
Yeah.
It was
even
like,
worse this season. Yeah. Even worse this season. To me, she was so much worse. She was, to me, she like seemed like such a crybaby and like at the worst of Daniel.
Yeah, way more
naive than Daniel. Yeah,
and it was like so annoying. I mean, like, can we just talk about the fact that she would run away from Tori at any instance, and it was only because Tori scratched her with some spike bracelet.
Yeah.
I mean, the PTSD
which left way too
angle,
big of a scar.
Yeah, the PTSD angle was definitely. I mean, it was an interesting card to play, you know what I mean? Because at the end of that fight, I rewatched, you know, the Hall Brawl shortly before we got on the call here, and then I rewatched Deck the Halls Brawl, and then I was kind of, you know, bouncing around to different points. But, you know, she came out of that fight on top. You know, she kicked Tori over the thing. Tori's the last one on the ground. But then she also had this moment where she looks up at the thing and instantly loud enough for everybody to hear, Robbie, what did you do? Like, she's turning on everybody. You know what I mean? It was sort of like, not like, hey, what happened? Are you okay? I can't believe you kicked Miguel over there. Robbie, what did you do? Like, dude, you were fighting too. We were all fighting. This could have happened to any of us. You've been listening to the Hollow Nine Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. That's the word hollow, the number 9, INE. Now broadcasting from our new home on the web, hollow9.com, where you can find info on all of our awesome programming as well as the team behind the shows. Leave us your feedback, join in the conversation, and be a part of the action. Find the Hollow Nine Network on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. Rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you find your podcasts. Email us at info@hollow9.com or at hollow9podcast@gmail.com. Join in the fun. Hollow Nine.
If you think making me repeat myself is going to somehow make the story change, or if you just don't want to hear what it is I actually have to say, but again, we changed course based on orders received on the flash band from company headquarters. Code gold, command eyes only. Standard operating procedure, as I know you are aware. Search and rescue would rarely venture into an unregulated area without more concrete proof of life. We sure found something out there already.
When you watch it as a little kid, you know, it's a monster movie, it's creepy, but then there's all the weird artificial intelligence stuff, there's the, like, rapey nature of the facehuggers and all that.
Why don't you stick your face in the egg, dude? Is there an egg opening in front of you? Stick your face in there and see what happens.
When I fall asleep at night, I have this irrational fear that something is going to crawl inside and, like, lay eggs inside of me. I'm actually wondering, now that we're talking about this, if this might have been the impetus for that.
You know, Star Wars comes out, and they go, what other movies do we have set in space? Boom, Alien gets green light the next day.
Very similar to just even how our government is in preparation for something where they didn't know exactly what was in store, like specifically xenomorphs.
Bodily fluids, and it's not just blood, there's a lot of like grease, and there's a lot of sweat. And if it wasn't the blood that got me, it was the sheer amount of sweat.
We're on a mission to bring back knowledge of the xenomorph.
The end of all mankind, all wrapped up in a bow, just waiting for us to come along. You're gonna find yourself staring down the barrel of a living, breathing devil in the flesh that bleeds acid and lives to kill us.
The New Jersey HorrorCon reputation is exploding. The atmosphere you guys have created. New Jersey HorrorCon was my entree into an actual horror convention.
Love it.
And you guys are doing a great job.
That is amazing. I'm super proud and super inspired to hear that. I mean, that's a testament to the community of cons and, you know, of horror and stuff in general.
My God.
Oh, it's Carmen Electra.
Hey,
wow, we are all giving high fives to an absolute icon.
This is incredible.
Trailblazer, amazing. You are amazing. Carmen Electra,
absolutely.
Be well.
Safe. Thank you so much.
Love.
Have a good one. Be well.
So
you can't see it on radio, but she's still
God.
Got it.
Oh, my God. Yes.
That's
absolutely.
My wife right
still
there.
Got
my wife gets the picture of Carmen Electra.
The wife does it. There you go, wife. Good job, wife. That's a keeper. That wife's a keeper.
Are you having a blast?
I am having a blast. Are you having a blast?
I am.
This place is awesome, right?
What's your most favorite part of the whole day so far?
When the guy dressed like Gene Simmons from Kiss stopped in front of our booth and we put Strutter on and he did lip sync to the whole thing.
Guys, if you haven't subscribed yet, go ahead and do that.
Yesterday I bumped into Michael Winslow. I got to have this whole experience where Leslie Easterbrook was lost and looking for her autograph table, and I got to take her all around.
It's spooky, actually. I'm going to turn the chair around a little bit so I can see you.
Oh, all right.
Keep an eye on you. I saw you and I thought, This guy knows everything.
Oh.
Terrific.
Oh, really?
And
oh.
Sound in here with
cool.
you.
Thank
yeah.
you. Thank you. Yeah, it's
really
amazing
clear.
How it...
Damon Della Greca of Slasher, this awesome app.
I wanted to do something that would really make it for these people who just love to create, who love horror.
Thank you for what you're doing, dude. It's
Thank
great
you.
That you put this together.
Absolutely, man. It's always good to see you.
We're trying to have as much fun, and we want people to have fun with us, and that's why we got guys like you stop by the table, hang out. We get to do the radio thing for a little bit.
He's from Jersey, you know. I'm from the South, so.
And I'm from the Bronx, so.
So we're all still
okay.
friends. That's good.
So we're all good, yeah. Daniel Frankenstein. I'm representing psychothematicmedia.com. Call ourselves a creative collective.
My name is Gail Bykowitz.
Yeah, I'm Hector Della Rosa. We're partners in crime here. We're doing special effects makeup, and we're also independent filmmakers.
When I ran into them earlier, they were definitely vampire cowboys.
I love Better Off Dead. I love Dylan's Heads. And I'm just so glad that you guys remember those films.
Oh my god, those movies. I would go to school and just try and talk like Bill and Ted all day.
No
like,
triumphant.
I wanted to go my $2, man.
Right?
I've walked around wanting those $2 for how many years now?
This is fantastic. Oh. But of course, I'm
never. We need some language lessons.
David Clone from the Hollow Knight Network, and by now you know what it's time for you to do. Let's go on over to NewJerseyHorrorCon.com, get yourself some tickets, and check out this awesome event where we are lifetime sponsors. We will be there from now until infinitum with all these incredible guests that are going to be at the next one, bringing you all the awesome from the show floor right to your digital door, right here at Hollow9.com at the New Jersey Horror Con and Film Festival.
Did you get it? I hope you got it.
I got it.
That's good. See you soon.